Hello and welcome to the Pain in the Arsenal podcast. My name is Andrew Dalbo. I'll be here with Josh and Henry discussing all the good and bad about Arsenal Football Club. Let's get started.
Hello and welcome to episode 11 of the Pain in the Arsenal podcast. My name's Andrew Dalzo. I'm here with Josh again. Henry unfortunately can't be with us. I guess the first thing to do is to give everybody a happy new year. It is now 2018. 2017 was, I guess, a mixed year for Arsenal. Would you agree with that?
It's always a mixed year. I don't think anything changed in that regard.
Yeah, so we've not had a podcast over the last week, 10 days, obviously with it being Christmas and New Year. So did you have a good time?
Yeah, did a lot of traveling, a lot of it's actually more stressful to go home whenever you're traveling and seeing 80 different people than it is to stay here and work. So it's good though. It's Christmas. It's fun. It's always fun. How was yours?
Yeah, mine was good. I worked out, I drove about 500 miles over the last maybe 10 days or something. It feels like 5 million miles.
I drove the exact same distance. So
yeah, so there was a lot of driving, a lot of travelling. But it's good, you know, you get to see family and get drunk, basically.
Yeah, it's nice to watch Arsenal with family that are also pained Arsenal supporters, because
yes,
then you can share the pain with someone.
Yes, and sharing is caring.
That's what they say.
So the last time we had a podcast was on Friday night, Friday the 22nd, I think it was, when Arsenal drew 3-3 with Liverpool. Since then, Arsenal played two games, a win against Crystal Palace, a 3-2 win, and then a frustrating 1-1 draw with West Brom that was on Sunday. So what are your overall feelings of the last week or so? Are you happy with the results or a bit disappointed with how it's gone?
For the Crystal Palace one, I think it's not being played up enough just how big it was to go to Selhurst Park and win. They hadn't lost at home since, I believe it was September, and they hadn't lost, period, since about November. And, you know, we went there, and the 3-2 scoreline, I mean, it's a lot better than I think it show. We did have a lot of defensive problems, but, I mean, Chelsea couldn't win when they went there. Nobody had been able to win there. And we went there, and we handled it pretty conclusively. I mean, it wasn't our best game by any stretch, but we put three goals up on a defense that has held people at bay there. And we, I mean, aside from the defensive frailties that we had, it wasn't like... It was a positive performance. The West Brom, obviously, we should all be quite disappointed about, not just because of the result, but because of the lack of quality that we had. And I think a lot of that comes down to just missing Mesut Ozil, though.
Yeah, I think maybe the combination of missing Ramsey, Ozil, and Cazorla, you can probably get away with missing one or even two of them if you're lucky. When you miss all three, there's always going to be a drop off of creativity in the team, and it was noticeable on Sunday. I think you're right to say that the win at Selhurst Park was significant, was because that was where Arsenal crumbled last year.
Yep.
Same with the Hawthorns as well. So these are two grounds that Arsenal really have not had fun at in recent seasons, and it was a significant victory. And I actually think Arsenal played well for probably 80 minutes of that game. There was just 5 minutes briefly after half time that really could have gone a lot worse than it did, and then there was kind of the last 5 minutes of the game. But other than that, I thought they were fairly comfortable. I mean, Palace only had two shots on target. They just happened to score them both, so
yep.
it was almost like the Liverpool game in reverse, really.
Yeah.
Apart from Arsenal were able to hang on with that third goal.
Yeah. And it was nice to see Alexis back to his effective self. Of course, that didn't continue against West Brom, but it was still nice. You know, people always talk about he's always going to give the ball away. It's just part of who he is. It's making up for that makes him special, and he did that against Crystal Palace. But again, I mean, he went right back to to less than stellar self against West Brom.
Yep. Alexis Sanchez playing well just before the transfer window, as I'm sure...
Convenience.
Yeah, as I'm sure hasn't gone unnoticed. That may be a bit cynical, but it's probably true. The problem for Arsenal, really, especially with Sunday's draw, has been the results of those around them. Liverpool and Chelsea are both unbeaten in their last five, having won four of them. United are the same, even though they've got a couple more draws in there. City are still relentless. Spurs have two games in hand, by the end of this week, they will have recovered their game in hand on Arsenal and have two games in hand on Liverpool and United. And if Arsenal don't win on Wednesday night against Chelsea, a game that we will preview later in this show, then they could find themselves 5, 6, 7, 8 points behind their direct rivals for the top four. So really, their problems haven't necessarily been their own form, though it hasn't been especially good, but the form of those around them has really improved, and they haven't improved with it, and that is quite worrying. Are you concerned moving forward that they will be able to keep pace in this race for the Champions League qualification positions?
Yeah, I mean, there's always a bit of concern. I mean, when you look at Arsenal's results lately, and they haven't lost since Manchester United, and even that game, you could argue we shouldn't have lost. I mean, we still did, so that's all that really matters. But, I mean, there have been some really positive results in there, though. It's just, it's always a matter of consistency. I feel like every other team has such an easier job finding consistency than ours. Even Liverpool has been able to find more consistency lately. And it's just, it's so hard to pin down why that is. But, I mean, it's something we'll talk about later, the injuries don't help, the Alexis Sanchez being the go-to guy not being in his best form certainly doesn't help. I mean, these are all things that are concerning, because you just look around, you wonder who's gonna step up and change things, and there's just not really anybody that I can point to and say that's the guy, he's gonna do it. I mean, especially with Ozil mysteriously injured again, with Lacazette in a goal drought, with Jack Wilshere. I mean, Jack Wilshere has been good. He just hasn't really stood out for me.
He's been solid, hasn't he? Without being
he's
spectacular.
Been, and there's a certain beauty in that, in consistency for a team that, like I said, has none. So it's nice that he can be relied upon to do what he's been doing. But at the same time, you need somebody to step up consistently, and the guys that have been doing that for us are either hurt or with one foot out the door, which leaves the club in a situation where I feel like if things aren't going well, there's nobody there to turn it around. So you just kind of have to hope that it goes well early, and then they can keep it going well, because once it goes well, they're fine, as we saw against Huddersfield, even though they did have that you know, brief lapse of form. But it's worrying. Because, like you said, everybody else seems to be doing well, but something about my optimistic side makes me think that we're going to be just fine.
I hope you are right. I do hope you're right. But I'm not as confident as you are. You mentioned there that Lacazette has been struggling from a little bit of a goal drought of late. Is that something that worries you? I know you have a couple of tidbits of information on it as well.
Yeah, right. I was looking into it because, of course, he's on my fantasy team, which I always feel the need to point out.
and everybody cares about everybody else's cares. Fantasy team.
It's been 455 minutes since Lacazette last scored a goal. It was in the 48th minute against Manchester United. Since that time, well, I should say in his past seven games, he's had 6 starts, 0 goals, but most worrying, I think, is just 4 shots on target. He had that bit there, I believe it was against Southampton, where he had some really poor efforts. And, you know, we could speculate all day about why this is happening, if he's frustrated by the way he's being treated. Maybe it's finally catching up with him. But, I mean, the fact is, in the past 3 matches, he's played 90 minutes twice, and he hasn't scored. But on the other side of that, despite the fact that he's not scoring, in those six starts, he has seven chances created and two assists, which is raises his season average for both chances created and assists a lot. So, you know, on the one side, it's troubling that he's not scoring. On the other side, though, if he's not scoring, at least he's contributing in other ways. I mean, we've had Giroud before where when he doesn't score, he doesn't score, he doesn't do anything.
Yeah.
So it's nice to see, and I think this is one of the main reasons why Wenger always wanted Lacazette and why I think he wanted Lucas Perez too, even though Lucas didn't work out, because Lucas is the same kind of guy where even if he's not scoring, he's doing other things.
Yeah. And I think, I think that comes from him being a mobile striker as well.
Yeah.
Like you brought up Giroud, that's the ability of having somebody who's mobile is that creates that space for those other guys.
Yeah, but then, I mean, part of the problem there still is that he was brought in to be the finisher. So it's great that he's creating chances, but who's he asking to finish those goals now? He's asking Alexis and Iwobi and Ozil, none of whom have had a very good rate of finishing. Alexis, no. I mean, there was one, and again, I don't have the exact, actually, I think it was, yeah, it was against Crystal Palace, where Lacazette had the perfect opportunity to shoot. He had every right to shoot, but rather than shoot, he gave it to Alexis. Alexis scored. So, you know, that's nice to see, and I think it does come down to maybe just he doesn't have the confidence right now to take the shots that he normally takes. But again, I mean, it's nice to see that even if he's not scoring, which we're very familiar with goal droughts, that he's doing other things as well.
I'm not especially concerned by the goal drought, purely because when I watch Arsenal play, I still see Lacazette playing well,
yeah,
and looking sharp in and around the box, and his shots on target are quite low, but he is still getting openings, if not shots away, and there are still chances there, and, you know, as the old saying goes, it's a lot more concerning when strikers are not getting chances whatsoever, when they're getting chances and missing them. And I still think Lacazette, just through his movement and through his interplay with those around him, he is still being able to create chances for both himself and for other people. And I think the goals will come. I think he's still playing well. Perhaps he's not quite as razor sharp in his decision making in front of goal. Maybe that's letting him down a little bit. But I still think he's certainly one of Arsenal's better attacking players of the last few weeks. I would more put his goal drought in general down to the overall play of the team has been a little bit more ponderous, has lacked the same incision of perhaps when they were playing through October and November, when they're really carving open teams like against Everton or Huddersfield. And Lacazette was at the focal point of that. Whereas at the moment in the midfield, the passing's a little bit slow and lethargic, and it allows the opposition to sit deep and soak up the pressure and compact the space. And that really limits Lacazette's ability to work in those areas in and around the penalty area, just because there's so many legs. You know, he's struggling to get the ball and get it in space and get shots off at goal.
Yeah, I would say I'm not concerned either, because he does have this other facet to his game where he can do more than score. And you're right, he is still getting his chances. I think maybe one thing maybe not concerned, but questioning is I feel like I'm seeing him drop back further towards the midfield more than I think he used to. But Giroud has done that too in his time, which is even more befuddling because Giroud should be nowhere near outside of the box. No. So I wonder if that's not just something Arsene Wenger's asking of his strikers now. And if it's going to be anybody, I'd rather see it happening to Lacazette than Giroud, because Lacazette does have that ability to push forward and collect the ball and move forward. I mean, I've always said that I think that he could play Alexis's position. Not that I'd want him to, but if he needed to, I think he could. So I'm not concerned with it so much as I'm questioning why this seems to be developing. If he's trying to make himself more available to get the ball and do more, or if he's just getting frustrated. Because there are games where he will go large portions of time without seeing much of a chance. Mm. And, I mean, there are times where his runs won't be picked out and he will be frustrated and he will almost throw an Alexis-like tantrum, which is never good to see. But yeah, I mean, this is all, he's new. He's still new to this league. He hasn't even been here a year yet. So this is going to be part of the growing process. And if the growing process is letting him bring out some of his other talents, then there's no reason to be concerned.
Yeah, there's a long way to go. Let's move on to, I've labeled this little section players who suck.
Very accurate.
That may be a tad harsh, but they've certainly not been playing well recently. The first one is Alex Iwobi. He started the last two games, and he just looks befuddled, really. He looks confused. His end product, especially, is really poor. The shot he had against West Brom, where he kind of turned his defender and tried to bend it into the top corner, was poor, really. He should have got that on target. His passing has been a little bit off, especially when it matters most. It's as if he knows that the next pass that he plays could set up a goal,
mm-hmm.
and the pressure gets to him and his technique falters just when it's most important. The other player who's not been playing especially brilliantly is Bellerin. Again, similar to Iwobi, is his end product is really bad. He's been making jokes on Twitter and Instagram that people have been asking him to work on his crossing. Well, it doesn't look like he has been working on his crossing, because it's very, very poor. And even defensively now, there are moments where he's caught out of position, he's not tracking runners, he's in this wing-back role where you're kind of a half full-back, half midfielder. It can be very easy to be caught either too high up the pitch or too deep, and one way or another you're not supporting the play of the team in possession, or you're not helping the structure of the team defensively. And Bellerin has been quite often caught betwixt and between. He's not been assertive in his position. It's almost as if he's not convinced of what he's quite meant to be doing, and he kind of ends up not really doing anything and just creating space for the opposition wingers.
Yeah, I've had especially a lot of problems with Bellerin, mainly because, mm-hmm. you know, even whenever his crossing wasn't good, he was still pretty reliable on the defense. But there have been times against both Crystal Palace and West Brom where he looked like he was just chasing shadows. Like, he would just follow the ball to the next player and just chase him, and there was no sort of tactical news, no kind of strategy, nothing. He looked like he was flustered, he didn't know what he was supposed to be doing. And then you couple with it the fact that he's not effective getting forward anymore, he's not crossing, he doesn't look fast anymore. And I've just listed everything that he used to be good at, and it's like, well then what are we waiting, then what is he bringing? And the answer right now is he's really not bringing much of anything. And that sounds incredibly pessimistic, and I hate to say it, because I still think that he's an incredibly talented player, but there's just something that isn't clicking with him right now, and I don't think it's helping him to keep getting run out there where he's not getting any better. And, you know, to kind of harken back to whenever Arsene Wenger took out Klasnek, I just wonder why he didn't take Bellerin out instead. You know, he said Ainsley Maitland-Niles is a better right-sided right back than he is a left back.
Mm, yeah.
So then why would the more effective player come out whenever Bellerin clearly needs to be sat down? He needs to recenter himself, to refocus, to do something, because this isn't working. It's a big problem.
Yeah, and the problem with Bellerin and Iwobi as well is they've showed their capabilities. These are two talented, if not good players, maybe you describe them as talented players. They both broke onto the scene really quite substantially and very quickly. Iwobi, especially within the space of about three or four games, established himself as one of Wenger's key guys, really, and he started playing towards the end of, I think it was two seasons ago, wasn't it? And then when the next season rolled around last year, he was the starter until he got injured. And that was kind of unquestioned, and no one really complained about it because everybody saw the ability that he had. Well, you fast forward 18 months and he just looks like a completely different player. And the exact same thing can be said for Bellerin, where that season where he and Nacho Monreal played opposite each other at left and right back, Bellerin especially, Monreal's obviously playing a different position now, but Bellerin looks completely different. He does look slower.
Yeah.
Which seems a little odd.
Yeah, and, you know, I always think we always seem to have this problem where we get these players and they have this initial burst where I think maybe it's just opposing defenses, opposing attacks haven't seen them enough to know them. So they're able to maximize their own talents, and it works incredibly well. We saw it with the Will, we saw it with Bellerin. But then once other teams start to get a read on them, it's like they can't adjust or they can't learn new tricks, and they keep trying to do the same old things. And, you know, I always think back to when Alexis first arrived. He had that 6-month, well, I guess 4-month period where he was incredible. Everything he did worked because he did the same thing every time. But then after that period, in the second half of his first year, teams started to get a beat on him, and he kind of struggled for that second half. But since he is an incredibly talented player, he was able to adjust, and obviously he got back to his best. And I think we're seeing now if Iwobi and Bellerin can make those same steps that Alexis made, where they have to learn. They have to learn to do new things, because the things they've been doing that found them success at the beginning aren't working anymore, and they're not going to work if they can't mix in some new things.
Yep, I think that's spot on. Let's take a little bit more of a optimistic approach. Are there any players who have impressed you over the last couple of weeks?
Yes, Callum Chambers has been... I mean, he hasn't been, like, fantastic, like, drop dead, stop everything. He's the next great Tony Adams. But I do think that, you know, I guess we should have seen this coming, because Arsene Wenger made it clear in the summer transfer window that he valued Chambers at around, I think it was like £20 million plus, which was a really high valuation, seeing as how he hadn't used him that much. But it all makes sense, because he did so good at Middlesbrough with a team that was not so good. And I've just been waiting for him to get this chance. And I guess he's been more hurt than I thought he had been, because now that he's got his chance... I mean, Arsene Wenger the other day, it was after Crystal Palace, they asked him why Chambers is in the starting 11 now. And he was very simple about it. He said, well, he's back. He's healthy now. That's why he's in the 11. And it makes it sound like he had this intention all along. And it's clear to see why. I mean, I think, and don't take this too far out of context, but I think Chambers reminds me a lot of Virgil van Dijk. Not in quality yet, but just in the style of play, how he's smaller than van Dijk, but he's physically strong. But he's also so confident on the ball that he can push play forward without a significant amount of risk involved. And there's still some maturing to do in that regard. He's only 22. But and that ties into him, his experience as a right back, his experience as a defensive midfielder. He has that capability. I think that's incredibly useful, because we've seen Monreal and Koscielny do it too, but I don't think that they're as composed over the ball as Chambers can be. He's not there yet. But I think that's something to definitely look forward to. And I you know, for a team like Arsenal that really struggles in the air, Chambers is very good in the air. And we saw that from the moment he started against Crystal Palace. He was immediately dominating the airwaves. And, you know, I've been really impressed with him. I think it's only going to get better. That's why I hope that he starts against Chelsea, because I think that's a big step for him. And hopefully it's a big step towards solidifying his place, because if this was the answer to why we sold Gabriel and didn't bring anyone in, then it's looking like it can pay off.
Yeah, and I think that point about him being good on the ball is especially pertinent when he's playing as the right-sided of a back three,
yeah,
rather than as a centre-half in a back four, because when you play either the left-sided or the right-sided role in a back three, you will tend to have space against opposing teams who play one striker, and it's often the right side or the left side of centre half that has the opportunity to step over the halfway line and begin to initiate attacks. You look at Azpilicueta. There are the Azpilicueta to Alvaro Morata is the assist to goal connection that's been the best. They've got more goals with Azpilicueta assisting Morata than any other pair in the Premier League, and that's because he has the experience of playing at right back. He's good on the ball. He's got a good cross, so he can step over the halfway line in that kind of deep third of the opposing half and begin to play passes into the central striker. And I think Callum Chambers definitely has that similar ability on the ball.
To kind of leapfrog on that, just a stat against West Brom, it's always Granit Xhaka that we think is going to be driving those long balls, but it was Callum Chambers who led the team and completed long balls against West Brom with 7. He attempted 13, just to kind of go off on what you're saying of how he's able to push forward and make something of that.
Yeah, which is important because, as we've seen with somebody like El Nene, anybody can sit in midfield and play 5-yard sideways passes and not really go anywhere and have a 95% pass completion rate. It's not especially difficult. It's actually quite easy. It's playing those balls through the thirds, playing them through the phases from defence into midfield, from midfield into attack, that is so difficult and so important. It's why players like Santi Cazorla are so influential, because not only does he keep possession, but he keeps possession moving forwards as well. And I think Callum Chambers, obviously not in midfield but playing at defence, has that same ability to be able to push the ball forwards, not just play the safe pass every single time. Are there any other players who have impressed you over the last couple of games?
Yes, and I'm going to catch a lot of crap for this because this is a player who always seems to impress me and very few others. But I think in the festive period, I think Granit Xhaka has been really effective, especially against Crystal Palace. He looked like a different man against Crystal Palace. He didn't lose possession once. He never took a poor touch, was not dispossessed. It just felt like, I don't know, it felt like he just had so much more confidence. He almost looked smooth on the ball. Like he was slipping past people, and he brought his pass completion back up over 90%, which is where it needs to be. And it was just a very good, solid game where I never once felt at risk when he had the ball, which is rare for him, even for me, who will always support him in everything that he does, apparently. But and I thought, you know, he wasn't as good against West Brom, but he was still that same effective self. I mean, he was the centerpiece of that. I mean, he led the team in touches, him and Callum Chambers, actually. And I just felt, again, it was just more confidence. He only lost the ball once in that game. I mean, that's the first thing I look for with Granit Xhaka, is how solid was he in possession, because that's the biggest criticism with him, is that he gives up possession too easily. Yeah. And he really didn't in those two matches. I mean, there were still instances where you might have got nervy for a bit, but you know, he definitely impressed me, and I hope that he impressed more than just me, since it's not hard for him to impress me.
I think Xhaka's test will come against games like Chelsea on Wednesday, where he's always been good if you give him time on the ball. That's his bread and butter. That's what he excels at. He's not so good when he's being pressed high up the pitch. We saw it against Liverpool a little bit, and Chelsea could very well implement a similar strategy, especially if they play an Eden Hazard type player off of Alvaro Morata. And if he's buzzing in and around Granit Xhaka's area, then that could cause problems for him. I do agree. I think he's played better against West Brom and Palace. I wouldn't say he's been brilliant, but I'd say he's been better than he has been.
Yeah.
Which, I guess, for now, that's probably all you can ask of him. You can't expect him to turn his form around overnight. You've got to expect him to improve gradually. But the Chelsea game will be a big test for him, because they're the kind of team that could cause him problems.
Yeah, they have a jam-packed midfield.
Yeah.
I do think that he played pretty well last time we faced Chelsea, though. I mean, that was one of our better games of the season, despite it being a 0-0 draw. So I do have faith. I mean, like you said, he's been better. He hasn't been brilliant, but you know, that it's small steps. He's got to take these steps towards improving, and confidence is such a big factor with so many of our players. I mean, you know, we always talk about Drew and Iwobi. It's all about confidence. And I wonder, I believe that Xhaka's the same kind of guy where, like you said, as long as he has time, he gets more confidence. And then, I mean, we've seen him deal with pressure before. I just think it has to do with confidence. If he has confidence over the ball, you can throw whatever you want at him. He's still going to make a logical decision, which isn't always the case with him.
It's a mentally fragile team.
Yeah.
Very, very mentally fragile team. And it has been for many years.
Mm-hmm.
So let's end our review of the festive period there. Arsenal still play one more game against Chelsea. We've been referring to it all programme. We will preview it properly at the end of the show. After the break, we will return and discuss the January transfer window. And there are some quite interesting and rather obvious subjects to touch on. Namely, Mesut Ozil and Alexis Sanchez. It feels like we've been talking about them, well, for about 18 months, really, doesn't it?
I'm quite sick of it, actually. I'm really tired of talking about their contract situation.
Yes, which is exactly why we're going to talk about it for another 15 minutes. So we will see you after the break. Hello and welcome back. That was a somewhat middling review of the festive period. Could have been better, could have been worse for Arsenal, that's for sure. But given the time of year, it is the 2nd of January and we have, I think, what, 30 days, 29 days of moronic transfer rumours clouding our vision over the next month or so. And in particular with Arsenal, there are two or three what I guess you could now call as sagas that will possibly come to a climax over the next few days, few weeks, over the next month. Obviously the most important two, the most influential two and the most long running two are Mesut Ozil and Alexis Sanchez. Firstly, Josh, what do you think will happen? And what would you like to happen?
Oh, man. I would like to see Ozil stay and Alexis sold. I do not think either one of them will leave, though. This is going to sound really bad, so let me say it, and then let me justify it.
Right, okay.
When Kevin De Bruyne went down with an injury, there was a piece of me that was like, oh, good, we can sell Alexis to City now. And I realize that sounds horrible, and I kind of regret that I even brought this up in the first place. But I really am at the point where I just want him to go. I just want him gone. And since City, nobody's going to reach City. You know, it's terrible because we've seen Robin Van Persie leave and win a title with United. We've seen Cesc Fabregas leave, win a title with Chelsea. So we would literally be seeing Alexis leave and win a title with City also.
Mm.
And that would be horrible. But, you know, at some point you really just got to cut your losses and accept that Alexis, he's not helping the team right now. You can't keep holding out for him to pull off a Crystal Palace every so often. That's not worth it.
Would you take less to sell him abroad? Assuming that...
Oh, absolutely.
Assuming that a Paris Saint-Germain or a Bayern Munich or something
were willing to pay,
let's say, 20 million for him, whereas City were willing to pay 30 million for him.
I would say if City are willing to pay 50 and PSG are willing to pay 20, I'd still sell him to PSG.
You'd still sell him abroad.
I think the number one goal is to get him abroad, but if that's not possible, then the number two goal is to just get him out.
Rather than keeping him.
Yeah, he's not happy here. And, and you know, Thierry Henry and Arsene Wenger, of course, disagreed again about there being a rift, but Arsene Wenger's never going to acknowledge that there's a rift. No. That's never going to happen. There's clearly tension with Alexis and other players and just with Alexis and the team in general, and that's not good for a team. I'm not going to say that it's one of the biggest problems Arsenal have right now. They've got quite a few problems, but it really is a problem with team mentality. And I mean, Alexis is a big presence, and I wouldn't be surprised if people are scared to make mistakes around him because they don't want to face a backlash from him. I mean, maybe I'm speculating here too much, but it's just I really want to see him just gone. Just get him out of the club. He's had a good run. Goodbye. And I don't think that'll happen, though. I think that it would take a major blockbuster change for Arsene Wenger to accept a bid for Alexis Sanchez. But, I mean, he was willing to do it in the summer, so I don't see why it... I don't think we should completely rule out the possibility of him leaving.
How little would it take you to just say, I'm just going to keep Alexis Sanchez?
You mean, like, as in terms of... The financial
price. So if City were only willing to offer 20 million, would you say we'll just keep him, or 15 or 10? How low would you go?
For City, I'd like to see 30.
Right. So if they offered 20 million...
Because we know they have...
No abroad offer, you would...
Yeah, I would just... And this is going to sound bad, but I'd keep it just so Alexis can't win the title with them, and he'd have to, he'd have to sort it out in another year. I don't know. I mean... We know City have the money. We know if they want them, they could pay whatever we want. So there's no reason to just accept anything. But
yeah, I think that's true. And while your point on De Bruyne was somewhat horrific, from another perspective, it was true that when I was watching that City game, and when De Bruyne and Jesus is also when they kind of collectively hobbled off.
Yeah,
my first thought was, well, Pep Guardiola is now going to desperately want Alexis Sanchez. He probably wanted him anyway, and now that want has only been compounded further. In fact, Guardiola would probably sell it as a need rather than a want.
Yeah,
rightly or wrongly. And like you said, City have the money. If they want to come and buy him, they probably will do. What about Ozil? How much would it take for, say, Manchester United to buy Mesut Ozil?
I wouldn't sell him to United at all.
You wouldn't sell him? Again, would you sell him abroad?
I would consider it. I think that would take a much higher bid. And again, there's a lot of side questions to this, too. Like, did we sell Alexis first? Because I think selling them both... without a return, it is incredibly risky. I think in order to sell him abroad, I would have to see probably... I mean, again, this is my personal preference because I like Ozil more. I think it would take between 30, 40, maybe even 50 for me to consider him being sold abroad, which isn't realistic. That's not going to happen. But, I mean, I still haven't ruled out wanting to see him sold. Not because he hasn't been great. I think he's been fantastic, one of our best performers lately. But these phantom injuries really take a toll eventually. I mean, it's like just when you think, okay, he's in a great run of form, we can bank on him, then he just disappears. And he's not getting hurt in the games. And he's not, I don't know, it just wigs me out a bit. there were a bunch of jokes whenever he got mysteriously hurt before the transfer window that, oh, it's a sign that he's leaving. And I'm like, you know, obviously I don't buy into that, but it's still something that just, when you support a team like Arsenal, these are the kinds of things that haunt you at night. You sit there and you think, well, what is Ozil really doing? And this is an incredibly selfish way of saying that I just wish he would not get hurt. A silly thing to say, but no, I think, I don't know, it would take a lot to sell him. I don't think I would sell him, period, to United, unless they're willing to pay, like, Pogba money for him, which I hope they wouldn't, because that would just be silly.
Yeah, I agree. And I definitely don't think Ozil will leave. because I actually think Wenger still believes that a new contract is possible.
Yeah.
Even if that may seem like a bit of a pipe dream at this point, to Wenger, it still seems like a genuine possibility that he's willing to wait for 6 months and take the risk on possibly agreeing one.
I don't think that it's a pipe dream for Ozil. I think it's a ridiculous pipe dream for Alexis. But
yeah, Sanchez for me is gone, whether it be in January or at the end of the year.
But I think that Ozil is trying to prove how much he wants to be here. I mean, we've talked about it a lot, about how you can just tell he looks happier. Mm. And I feel like that comes down to him accepting where his future lies, and since it's happening at Arsenal, I have to believe that he might have convinced himself that he wants to be here. But I mean, Wenger said, you know, by the end of December we'll know what's going to happen with those two, and it's now January 2nd and we still don't know what's going to happen with those two. So
shock.
We'll see.
Arsene Wenger telling lies again.
No way.
It's almost as if he's done it before.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think the Ozil Alexis thing is probably going to drag and drag and drag. And to be honest, I just want it sorted out either way.
At this point, I don't care if they stay or go. I really don't.
I just
want
to know. Yeah.
Yeah.
And Wenger today, we're recording this on Tuesday afternoon, so this morning in his pre-match press conference, said that he was going to sign, and I quote, top quality. Is the word you use, top quality players, if Ozil or Alexis were to leave. Now, I'm not sure what Wenger classes as top quality. I significantly doubt that it is the quality that Arsenal fans will be wanting. Perhaps his idea of a top quality replacement is Alex Iwobi suddenly coming through the squad. Or a Theo Walcott resurgence.
Oh, that's not even funny.
Unfortunately.
Yeah, I feel like we need an Arsene Wenger translator that tells us what his version of top quality is, because it's clearly different than everyone else's.
Yes. Yes, I think that is depressingly true. Two other players whose futures are far from clear. Both of their respective contracts also expire in the summer. The first is Santi Cazorla. Obviously, he's not going to leave in January, but he has now been injured for 14 months, is it? 15 months, something like that.
Yep.
It's been a long time. He's had, he said himself he's had 11 or 12 ankle surgeries. He's actually got, there was a photo of his arm, kind of his forearm, and they've taken a skin graft from his forearm and put it onto his ankle. But what they've not factored in is the fact that there's a tattoo all the way down his forearm. So half of the tattoo is now on his ankle, because that's where the skin graft has moved. Which is quite a disgusting picture, but to be honest, I think, and it's extremely sad, that really sums up the difficulties that Cazorla has had with his ankle over the last, 14 months, 18 months, however long it has been. Do you think he remains an Arsenal player beyond the expiration of his contract in the summer?
No, and I don't want this to sound bad, but I hope he doesn't either. I mean, obviously we all think the world of Cazorla. He's one of those really great understated players. I mean, anytime they do these interviews with Arsenal players, these fun little interviews where they ask them who the most talented player is, everybody always says Santi Cazorla.
Yeah,
they always
say Cazorla, yeah.
And you see it every time he takes to the pitch, but I mean, this kind of, it reminds me of the Abu Dhabi. Thank you, Abu Dhabi.
Gosh, he must have been a big player.
Whatever his name was. That's the saga of how long do you wait for somebody to get healthy before you just say, okay, we've waited, we've given him his chance, it's sad, but we got to find something else.
We got to move on.
Yeah. Because I do feel like this hope that he's going to get healthy is kind of holding back Arsene Wenger's willingness to bring in somebody that could do the job Cazorla did. Because right now, I do think we're a bit thin in the midfield, and I do wonder if that's because he's holding out hope that he won't have to sign someone, that he can find a solution internally. And I don't know. I mean, I, I do think that since he's gone this long without his contract, I don't know what's going to change going forward. I mean, he's not going to, I guess there's a chance he returns to training, but how much do you expect from him whenever he comes back? I mean, he's not young anymore. He's one of our more senior players.
Yeah, I mean, that's exactly what I was going to say. He's now 33.
Yeah.
Which he turned 33 in December, so he's not like... The thing with Abu Diaby was every season that he missed, he was still only 22, 23, 24, and you thought his prime is still ahead of him. Mm-hmm. What if type thing. A little bit like Robin van Persie, and that actually ended up kind of paying dividends, isn't it? He probably didn't get to the best of his ability until he was 28, 27, 28, because he was always injured. And when he eventually was finally able to stay fit, it wasn't until he was in the back end of his prime. Cazorla is well past his prime now. It's not like there's 5-6 years ahead of him that Arsenal have got to look forward to. It's maybe one season, possibly two. Realistically, is it worth waiting for such a short period for such an aging player who has had so many injury problems? Perhaps not. I would like to see him stay just because I absolutely love him. He's my favourite Arsenal player. And I think he's brilliant. And I just like to have him in the squad, if nothing else.
Yeah.
But I still think it's a position that needs to be addressed in the transfer window, whether that be in January or more likely in the summer. Another player whose contract will expire at the end of the year currently is Jack Wilshere. Now, both he and Wenger have said that they expect a deal to be done. And I think that seems fairly probable. Very rarely is Wenger so open about dealings. So when he is so willing to discuss this one on a public basis, that suggests to me that it's all but wrapped up behind the scenes. Assuming Wilshere signs a new contract, do you think that he can establish himself as a regular starter for the rest of the season and moving forward, especially once the likes of Aaron Ramsey and Mesut Ozil return?
Yeah, I think that's the big question is how he reacts once Ramsey returns. I mean, we've talked about this before, but Ramsey does have trouble when he gets back from injury getting back into top form, so that might help Wilshere. But honestly, right now, Wilshere, for me, hasn't done enough to prove that he should be starting over Ramsey. I don't think he's done enough at all. I mean, he's been consistent, like we said, and there is a definite value in that. But he hasn't been... There hasn't been a game where he really stepped up and said, all right, this is my game, I'm in form, I'm taking over. And Ramsey's done stuff like that. He does it pretty frequently, actually. So I think he still needs more time to prove himself. And I think that Chelsea is the big, big step for him. Because
yeah, this is a huge test for him.
These are the kinds of games that he needs to be proving that he can be a difference maker. He's not just going to be a passenger. He's going to be the guy that steps up and makes a difference, because we know he's capable of it. We've seen it before. It's just a matter of now making that capability show up more often than just, you know, once every 2 years when he's healthy. And then obviously health plays a big part in him hanging around. But
I
mean, obviously we both think he's going to stick around, and we both believe he should stick around. I don't think there's going to be many people out there that think we should sell him just because he's still only, I think he just turned 26, or is he still 25?
He turned 26 on New Year's Day.
Okay, right, yeah.
So he's just turned 26.
Yeah, he's still in a good point in his career where, like you were talking about with Diaby and with Cazorla, he's entering his prime. He can still hit 27, 28 if he stays healthy, and that could be his big breakthrough time. So... Yeah, I mean, ideally, that's what'll happen. He just stays healthy. He steps up a bit in these bigger games, and then he can finally fulfill the potential of being the prodigal son of Arsenal.
Yeah, and I think in terms of natural talent, Arsenal will probably have to spend at least 30 million to find a player with the same natural ability as Jack Wilshere and the same potential and ceiling as Jack Wilshere. Now, whether Wilshere ever reaches that potential and that ceiling is a very different question, and it's one that probably has a rather pejorative answer, but in terms of taking a risk on somebody, in terms of taking a punt, why not? He clearly wants to stay. I reckon a deal could be done for not that eye-watering wages of, you know, £150,000-£200,000 a week. And on top of that, you don't have to pay a transfer fee because he's already your player.
Yeah.
So why not have a roll of the dice and see if you can get him back to the best of his ability, which is a very, very good central midfielder. No, go on.
I was going to say, and you compare that to, like, Elneny and Coughlin, who we talk about all the time, who are reliable, but...
But limited.
But incredibly limited. Wilshere is proving that he can be reliable, but with a ton of upside, which makes him infinitely more valuable than those other two.
Absolutely. Let's look at some possible incomings, who obviously will not be incomings. I'll put this disclaimer out. I don't think Arsenal will sign anybody other than perhaps a reserve fullback without anybody leaving the club first.
And I completely agree.
Specifically Alexis and Ozil. I'd be very surprised if they bring in anybody without somebody leaving. So these names that me and Josh have kind of banded around a little bit, really take them with a grain of salt that the first thing to happen will be a departure, not an incoming. So who do you think Arsenal could sign in January if the circumstances do go such a way?
I mean, who would I like to see them sign? I'd love to see Nabil Fekir. I think that he's the only player out there that I would have faith in taking over an Alexis role, because he plays very similar, and he's off his mind in France this year. He's just going crazy with goal production.
And he has a prior relationship with Alexander Lacazette as well.
Exactly, yeah, which, of course, I haven't had to talk about transfer sagas with Lyon lately, but I don't look forward to talking about that, because they're
a ball ache.
Yeah, they like to take you for a run whenever they start negotiating, and you know they're kind of like, they remind me of Arsene Wenger actually, with how much they just beat around the bush and don't ever tell you straight as it is. But I'd like to see him. I think it's more likely that he shows up in the summer. I'd really like to see. I think if I had to pick somebody that I think is actually somewhat realistic, I would pick Malcolm, although there is a major asterisk attached to his name, because the number that's being thrown around is 44 million for him, which is it's very steep. But I mean, that's cheaper than Fekir is going to most likely cost. Yeah. And the thing about Malcolm is he's getting exponentially better every time he has a full season, and he's playing for Bordeaux, who are 15th in the French league. So the potential is there for him to move. I just, like you said, unless somebody leaves, that's not going to happen, because he'd be getting in the way of Iwobi, and God forbid anybody gets in the way of Alex Iwobi.
Theo Walcott.
and plus, he's also linked to Manchester United, who, according to Jose Mourinho, don't spend enough. So that could be a nice fix-all for the special one. I mean, I've kind of ruled out Julian Draxler. I don't think that's going to happen. He's not getting that much playing time at PSG, and he still maintains that's where he wants to be. Mm. And of course, they're all supposed to say that before. I mean, even if they plan on leaving, they're supposed to say, "I'm happy here. I love it." But I don't know. I mean, he's had so many opportunities to make that move to Arsenal, and it's never happened. And maybe that's not entirely his fault, but I just don't get too confident when I think about him coming to the Emirates. And I guess lastly would be Leon Goretzka, who I've talked about ridiculously a lot.
Josh's homeboy, for those who aren't quite aware.
He's my homeboy, yes. but of course, the problem with him is that he's injured, and he's going to be injured for quite some time. He had a stress fracture. So if we really want another box-to-box midfielder who's already hurt, I don't think we do. Plus, he's leaving in... His contract's up in the summer. So, you know, I don't see why Arsene Wenger would go spend money on a guy that he could just pre-negotiate with. There were reports out that he'd agreed to join Bayern Munich, but his agent came out and squashed those rumors. So a bit of optimism there, since he's been highly tied to Bayern, to Arsenal, to Liverpool, even to Barcelona. I don't know. Aside from that, who do you have an eye on?
I think if I could choose, I agree with you on Fekir. I think he'd be an outstanding signing. His goal and assist output this season has been brilliant. And he's come back from injuries as well,
yeah,
which is why he was quiet over the last couple of years. And again, that prior relationship with Lacazette is important. I'm coming around to the idea of Wilfried Sahar. I was initially quite sceptical on him, but I think against Arsenal, who's excellent, I think he's been very good for the last few weeks. That's a move that likely won't happen until the summer. But again, that's something that the groundwork could be laid for over the next few days. Similarly, I'm quite high on Riyad Mahrez. I think he'd be a good signing. The thing, I've talked about the dribbling statistics with Sanchez before and the number of dribbles per game that he's completed that have dropped significantly. And the type of player that I'd like is somebody who can pick up the ball and beat two or three defenders. They may not have the best end product. Look at Mohamed Salah, for example. He's actually a terrible finisher. But he's so quick and he's so sharp and his movement is so intelligent that he creates so many chances for himself that he doesn't need to be a good finisher. Now, I'm not saying that Arsenal should go and sign a wasteful player, but actually, in terms of the current players that Arsenal have, especially if you're able to keep Mesut Ozil, if you provide him with a real burner out wide, somebody who can attract attention just by virtue of his presence, somebody like a Zahar or Mahrez, even if they're a little inconsistent, I still think that would open up quite a lot of space for this team. And it is an attack that has struggled in recent weeks for space. It's been very tight, it's been very compact, it's been very narrow. And signing a real whippet of a winger, I think, would be quite a smart move. Whether that player is out there or not is another question. And whether Arsenal are willing to sign that player is even more of a trepidation of mine. We will have to see. Before we move on and talk about the Chelsea game, is there anything else you'd like to discuss regarding our favourite time of the year?
No, I mean, like you said, it's foolish to expect anything. Why talk about it?
I am extremely interested to see what will happen, because really I don't have a clue what will happen.
I don't think Arsene Wenger does either.
Wenger himself has said nobody knows what will happen with Sanchez, and I don't know if he was referring to Ozil as well, but I suspect the same thing can be said there. So I am very intrigued, but again, predicting it is a folly's task, really, isn't it?
Yeah.
So let's take one final break before we preview Wednesday night's game against Chelsea. We will see you in just a moment. Hello and welcome back to the Pain in the Arsenal podcast. We have reviewed Arsenal's festive disappointments. Is that a bit harsh?
I'd say festive lukewarm.
Lukewarms.
Yes.
Yeah. We have looked ahead to the January transfer window, which is going to be a goddamn nightmare. And now we will look ahead to Wednesday night's game against Chelsea, which is absolutely massive. I wrote a piece up on Pain in the Arsenal, which you can go and check out, asking whether this is the season on the line. And the more I think about it, the more I seem to answer yes to that question. But Josh, in planning for this podcast, you were somewhat confident. Why?
I'm remarkably confident. Even, you know, I'm here to be confident, and I always seem to be confident. But I'm even, you know, there are sometimes like going into the City game where I'm confident, but in the back of my head, I'm like, are you just doing this to keep up your optimistic appearance? And this time I'm like, no, I'm legitimately very confident.
I mean, you have to redress the balance of the kind of base and boring and downright sadness of British people. We need a bit of life and refreshing spruceness from an optimistic American.
I'm happy to oblige. So why am I optimistic? Well, I'm looking at the injury list now, and Arsenal is without Cazorla, Ramsey, Giroud, Klasnik, and they will probably be without Monreal, Ozil, Koscielny, which sounds mortifying.
Yep.
But you look back, and I always, anytime people doubt Arsenal, I always point to the same game. I point to the FA Cup final against Chelsea, where we had no Mustafi, no Koscielny. All we had was Mertesacker, Rob Holding, and Monreal, which was...
Mertesacker had played, I think, about 30 minutes of football all year or something.
Yeah, and it was the best he's ever been. And and him and Rob Holding had a plan when they went in, and they frustrated the hell out of Diego Costa, which is probably one of the more satisfying things in human existence, is seeing Diego Costa frustrated. And it just, I mean, it was still a close game, but they were in control. And that's a really rare thing when Arsenal can say they're in control against a top team. And, you know, we faced them again in the Community Shield. And again, it was close, but we were every bit their equal. And we won.
Yep.
And then we went to Stamford Bridge, like I said earlier in the podcast. And we weren't in good form at the time. And everybody expected Chelsea to win again, like they did in the FA Community or in the FA Cup final. And we controlled the game, and we ended up with a 0-0 draw, which, again, that was one of our more positive performances on the year. It was a shame. We probably deserved to win. So here we are welcoming Chelsea to the Emirates, and we're probably going to have some combination of Chambers, Mertesacker, Mustafi at the back. And to me, that's an upgrade over the defense that we had in the FA Cup final. Because we're going to have Mustafi, who just loves pocketing Chelsea strikers. He's done it three times. He's done it to Costa twice and Morata once. And Mertesacker has done it to Costa. And then we've got Chambers, who I have to imagine is a bit pissed off about the way West Brom ended. And I do believe that he's going to want to stamp himself on the next possible match. And knowing what he knows about...
Hopefully not literally.
and knowing that Monreal and Koscielny are coming back soon, he's got a lot to prove. So I actually have a lot of faith in our defense to not just shut down Morata, but really give Hazard trouble as well. The one area of concern would be that whole Marcus Alonso versus Hector Bellerin side of the pitch, where I'm just staring at those two names now across from each other thinking... If there was a time for Bellerin to buck up and do something, this would be a great time for that. Whether that will happen or not, I don't know. Chelsea is pretty battered too. I mean, their defense is Christensen and Rudiger. I mean, they're both good, but it's not the same Chelsea defense that. I mean, I guess it still is the same Chelsea defense, but it's not the same names that we're used to seeing back there that had that fear factor. So, no, I'm not really that worried. I mean, I think the midfield is a point of concern because of Bakayoko and Kante being the very mobile midfielders that we don't have. But again, Xhaka is he can deliver surprises.
I hope so.
And I guess it depends on who starts next to him. I mean, there's some projections out there that say Elneny will start. I really want to believe that Wilshere will still start. I do think he will. And this is a big game for him. I mean, kind of like what I said with Chambers, Wilshere has to understand the situation he's in right now, where Ramsey's on his way back, and he needs to do something if he's going to continue to assert himself in the starting 11, because he hasn't done enough yet. And, I mean, other than that, it sucks we're not going to have Ozil, but I don't know.
Do you think Do you think Ozil will not be fit for?
I don't know. I think I saw something where it said he was doubtful. Yeah, it's
because I think he will play.
There was
and this. This is based on no information other than just a gut feeling. That I wonder if he perhaps could have played against West Brom, but Wenger, with the Chelsea game on the horizon, said, I'm not going to risk you. I'm going to play it safe because I want you fit for the Chelsea game.
We're going to go with that. That's what's going to happen.
That may be me being a little bit optimistic and maybe even naive, but I have a feeling that that may be what happens.
Well, I mean, hopefully. This has happened earlier in the year, too, where we had people that weren't supposed to play, and then they remarkably...
Yeah, Lacazette. Yeah. Lacazette miraculously being fit.
Yeah, which was just fantastic. So it's I don't think it's naive at all. I think it's perfectly realistic, and it makes sense. And, you know, Arsene Wenger has been playing his cards closer to his chest this year in terms of who's healthy, and this might be just him trying to throw a little, you know, a little chaos into the situation of you know, planning for Welbeck and planning for Ozil are two completely different game plans. Of course, that's assuming Welbeck starts and not Alex Iwobi. but no, I'm
who we're big fans of on this podcast. if you weren't previously aware,
well, we are fans. We're just highly critical of him because we should be. yeah, I feel confident about this. I'm sitting here staring at the two predicted starting 11s, and I really do. I don't. I guess the main area of concern, and I kind of talked about this in an article myself, is if Hazard takes the Zaha approach, because Zaha really made a point of going straight at Chambers the entire Crystal Palace game. He felt like he could expose him, and he didn't. He had a few opportunities, but I don't think it worked out like he had hoped. And I wonder if Hazard won't take the same approach to targeting Chambers and trying to get into his lane. But I mean,
yeah, and that's the big issue with the three at the back is if and it's not just Chambers, it could be Mustafi shifted over to the left if Mertesacker comes in, because I don't think Mertesacker would play one of the wide centre half roles, or it could be Rob Holding even. When one of the two wing backs is caught too far up the pitch, the wide centre half, either on the right or left side, can be left in quite a lot of space. And that's exactly what Crystal Palace tried to create for themselves, tried to engineer for themselves with Zaha up against Callum Chambers. And actually, they were able to provide Zaha with a few of those opportunities. And during the 5-minute spell that just after half time that caused Arsenal the most problems, it was Zaha and Ruben Loftus-Cheek linking up down that left hand side that created the main chances and obviously created the goal as well. Hazard is a much better player than Wilfred Zaha, and if you give him and say Cesc Fabregas space to work in down that left side, up against the Callum Chambers, who's been dragged out of his central position, that could spell trouble for Arsenal. It's not necessarily Chambers' fault. It's more the shape and the structure of the team. That's where the weaknesses are, is in exposing those two wide centre halves. I remember at the start of the season, Liverpool did it spectacularly with Mane and Salah, and they both had acres of space to work in down either wide flank, and their pace just ripped Arsenal apart because Monreal and Koscielny, the two wide centre-halves, did not want to commit because of the speed of Mane and Salah. And again, the same thing could happen with Chelsea.
I mean, for what it's worth, I do think that Arsenal has a hell of a lot more to prove in this game than Chelsea does.
Yep.
And I would hope...
Yeah, I think that's true.
I would hope that works in their favour. Because, like I said, I mean, Chambers, Wilshere have a lot to prove. Xhaka has a lot to prove. Maitland-Niles has a lot to prove. Lacazette has to be hungry for a goal. These are guys that have been inconclusive so far this year and need to step up, especially in a big game like this. Whereas, you know, Morata's, he's been good, but he's had his trouble. But I don't think he, and especially Hazard, I don't think these guys have any reason to to go above and beyond, to really push themselves to prove. I mean, there's always going to be that added impetus of playing a direct rival, but I do think the motivation is much more in favor of Arsenal, especially playing at home.
Yeah, the area that really concerns me is in the midfield. You touched on it a little bit. Conte has switched to this 3-5-2 really, rather than a 3-4-3, where he's played Kante, Bakayoko and Cesc Fabregas all in the centre midfield. And what that's allowed them to do, while it offers them a little bit less in the wide areas, they're still able to play three centre-halves, which is what Conte always wants to do. But they're also able to play three central midfielders, which allows them to both play with this kind of fluctuation of wing-backs out wide, but also control the midfield. The key weakness with the 3-4-3 is you only have two central midfielders, and Arsenal have struggled with that in the past, whether it be Xhaka and Ramsey or Elneny or Coquelin or Wiltshire in there. They have struggled to control games because there's only two players in there. I think Xhaka and Wiltshire are up against the triplet of Kante, Bakayoko and Fabregas, assuming that's the way that Conte goes. I think that could spell trouble for Arsenal, personally.
Yeah, we had that kind of situation up against Tottenham too, though, where we had to face Eriksen and Ali.
Yeah, that's true.
And, I mean, I realize that I always point back to that game saying, well, this is what we can do, whenever it's usually not what we do. But the fact that we did prove that we can do it, I think it is another thing that's giving me a bit more confidence that while it does look lopsided, I don't know. I feel like there are times where Arsenal understands the stakes and does step up. It doesn't happen very often. I think it's maybe happened one or two times tops this year. But this just strikes me as the kind of game where Arsenal has too much quality. They have too much pride to not step up. And as I'm saying this, I'm like, they're going to prove me wrong, but I'm going to stay strong. I'm going to stay optimistic and say that this is the kind of game
you're right.
that they step up to what needs to be done.
Certainly, Arsenal have the ability to win this game. They have the ability to win any game. That's been one of the main characteristics of this team for many years, is that when they play well, they really begin to hum. And they can carve open any opposition. And I still think that's true today, that if they play their best, they will probably win. The problem is, I don't think that they will be able to play at their best, especially given the injuries that you reeled off. So let's have a look at how Arsene Wenger may deal with the absentees. These are the players that are definitely not available for selection. Nacho Monreal, Aaron Ramsey, Siad Kolasinac, Olivier Giroud, and then obviously Santi Cazorla, who's been absent for the whole year. Lauren Koscielny, Arsene Wenger said on Tuesday morning, has a 30% chance of playing. I'd be surprised if he plays. He also says that Mesut Ozil will face a late fitness test. I have a feeling he will play, but again, that's just a bit of a premonition of mine. We will have to see. How would you adapt the squad to the many absentees that currently pervade it?
I think you try to stay as close to what you've been doing as you can. I think you stick with the back three. I like the idea of Mustafi, Mertesacker, and Chambers back there, because I think that gives us a lot of aerial ability. That
would you shift Mustafi to the left side?
Yeah, you'd have to.
Of the three?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think that actually gives us the leg up on the aerial side of things, which is something we're not used to being at all. I mean,
no, that's very unusual for us.
Yeah, Chelsea will have Morata, who's good in the air. They'll have Christensen, Rudiger are good, but I think that we would have the upper hand there, which is just unbelievable to think about. And I guess you have to start Xhaka and Wilshere in the middle. They both have so much to prove, like I said, and they both have so much ability to be a difference maker. I would love to see Ozil out there. I hope that your premonition is right. And seeing as how we really don't have another option than Sanchez, and given his big play potential, you have to start him. And then ideally we'll see Lacazette up front. And as far as the wingbacks, we don't really have any options. So it's got to be Maitland-Niles, and unfortunately it has to be Bellerin.
Yeah. I have Wenger going with a back four. The reason I say that is because there are lots of injuries to the centre-halves, Monreal and Cuccioni, namely. That's if you call Monreal a centre-half, obviously, which in the back three, Wenger has played him there. So I believe that Wenger will want to limit the number of centre-halves on the pitch. Furthermore, with Kolasinac out injured, who Wenger has said he prefers at wing-back, not full-back, and Maitland-Niles starting, Wenger has said he's better suited to a fullback role, I believe that he will want to play with a traditional pair of fullbacks in Bellerin and Maitland-Niles, with Chambers and Mustafi at centre-half. I don't know if that's right or wrong. I don't know if that's better or worse. That's just what I think Wenger will do. I agree, Jacques Ramouche will play, Lacazette will play, Sanchez will play. I hope Ozil will play. I wonder if Welbeck will come in for Iwobi, potentially. Iwobi's been desperately poor, and obviously Welbeck was excellent in the FA Cup final. He surprisingly started in the 0-0 draw earlier in the year because Wenger likes his industry and his willingness to work. So Wenger obviously trusts Welbeck in these big games. I wonder if that again comes through. But certainly there aren't that many options for Wenger to turn to beyond the 14 or 15 players in the squad. Players like Coquelin, Elneny, they're very limited. They're not really going to offer that much. And there were even reports that Arsenal may think about bringing Lucas Perez back from his loan, such as their limitations in their attacking options. Now, I'm not here to say whether that would be a wise move or not, but that is proof that there are definitely restrictions to the number of options that Wenger has available to him at this current moment. And that could have an effect, I think, on Wednesday. Let's perhaps throw a little bit more water on your fiery optimism. Who are you most scared of in the Chelsea team? I assume it's Eden Hazard.
See, I'm going to make a fool of myself again, because I think I pointed this out before. Yeah. And I recognize how good Eden Hazard can be, but maybe I'm just incredibly biased against Chelsea. I don't know what it is. I've just never seen Hazard as this, like, this ridiculous talent that just changes things. I've seen him disappear too often to think. And I do think he's a tremendous player, but he doesn't strike me as somebody that's scary. I think if anybody would see, I think I'm more scared of Morata than I am of Hazard, just because of his aerial ability and our horrific zonal marking that we still managed to employ. But I guess who would scare me the most? It might be N'Golo Kanté, because I think that he has the ability to wreck whatever Xhaka and Wilshere attempt to do.
You mean Kanté from a defensive?
Yeah.
Just in terms of just being annoying.
Yeah, because I mean, against Tottenham, how I said we really did dominate the midfield, but they don't really have a Kanté type. Not many people do. And I could see him giving Wilshere a lot of grief. I could see him giving Xhaka a lot of grief. And Cesc Fabregas always worries me, just because he does still have that tremendous ability to create chances on a fly, and that bothers me. If I had to pick one, though, it would be N'Golo Kanté from a defensive perspective. From an offensive perspective, I think Morata. As much as I have confidence in our aerial ability, assuming they go with the lineup that I thought they would, there's always that fear of dropped assignments and zonal marking not going as we planned.
Yeah, and I think Morata's movement when the ball goes wide is very clever. And when you're not man-marking, as a striker, if you're intelligent, you can find those pockets of space, whether it be at the far post or the dart across the near post or pulling back up, and that is something that Morata excels at. So yeah, I think that's a very fair assessment of the threat that he offers, and he's proven it throughout the year. He's scored a lot of goals, he's played well. I really like him as a player. I think he's very, very good. Certainly he will be a handful for Mustafi, Chambers and company. Let's end then on a score prediction, because obviously that is always a futile thing to do. But nevertheless, what do you think the score will be?
I'm going to say it's going to be 2-1 in favor of Arsenal.
Oh.
And it's a remarkably passive score prediction.
That wasn't as outrageous as I was bracing myself for.
But I do think you'll see us be really convincing, and I think that one goal will give us, the Chelsea will score, will give us some nerves, but I do think,
right.
And of course this is obviously completely blind speculation, but this is how I see it going.
Yeah, I think the one thing that really does play into Arsenal's hands is their ability at home. The form at the Emirates has been really very good. They've only lost one game all year at home, and that was to Manchester United, a game that they absolutely dominated, and you play 10 times again and they win 9 of them. So really, you could argue that they've not deserved to lose any games at home all year. So because of that, I'll go for a 1-1 draw.
Hmm. That's far less pessimistic than I thought you were going to be with your score prediction.
Yeah, I think it will be quite an even game. I think Chelsea will have more possession, and I think they'll probably create the better chances, but I think Arsenal may just nick one. I am very nervous about what happens if Arsenal lose, because mentally this team is just crap. They have no resolve. They have very little mental strength. And if they lose to Chelsea, they go 10 points behind Chelsea. A gap opens up to the top four, especially if Spurs win on Tuesday and Thursday night. There's drama about Alexis Sanchez and a rift in the dressing room. There's uncertainty over Wiltshire, Özil and Sanchez. There's a growing calls for Wenger out. And it reminds me of last season and that whole negative atmosphere that began to encircle the Emirates. And it just spiralled out of control. That's what I'm really worried of. That especially if Arsenal lose badly, if they lose 2-0 or 3-0 and they look completely lost, I would be extremely concerned about their ability to bounce back from that.
I agree. I don't think that's going to happen. I think there's...
Oh, God, I hope you're right.
I just think there's too much to prove and too much quality to prove it with to succumb to... A multiple goal deficit.
Well, we will find out.
Yes.
We will find out. It is, kickoff is what, about 25 hours away?
Yes.
As of recording. So I'm sure you can work out when we're recording this. is there anything else you want to say on this game or on Arsenal or on the fact that it's now 2018?
Not really. No. let's hope that 2018. I mean, it's shaping up to be an exciting year for Arsenal. They brought in all these new people to help with the transfers, so hopefully that means more than nothing.
Yes. I am sure we will find out in due course. So, thank you very much for listening. Again, you can find us on Twitter at Pain in the Arsenal, or just give us a Google. You can find us at paininthearsenal.com as well. If you've got any questions on Facebook, on Twitter, get in contact with us. We'll try and answer them on the show to the best of our ability. Give us a subscribe on iTunes or on Stitcher or wherever you get your podcast from. Give us a rating and review as well. They really help us in trying to advertise this further. And if you just have any comments or anything like that, don't hesitate to get in contact with us. We're always looking to improve, and we always want to hear from our listenership as regularly as possible. I hope you had a lovely Christmas. I hope you had a lovely New Year. and I hope 2018 is as prosperous as it was last year for Arsenal and for everybody else. So thank you very much for listening, and we will see you soon. Goodbye.